And on the line with me now is community advocate Fiona York, who's been working with issues around homelessness and the Strathcona homeless camp for quite a while. Welcome, Fiona.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the city's planning to remove the camp. Can you tell me a bit about what their plans are?
Sure. So this kind of follows on emergency motions that came to City Council in October. There are some proposals around different types of housing that could be put forward, and it was considered emergency housing, and this was coming largely from the mayor. And then there was a debate and decision, and the decision was around putting forward SROs, temporary hotels, and other forms of temporary housing. So it was really targeted around Strathcona Park and kind of responding to concerns from people in the area, residents in the area, and neighbors and businesses in the area, very specific to emergency housing, targeting people staying in the park so that the park could be cleared. And there is also, in the last version of that motion, there was referral to shelters as well. So what we're seeing here now is the park board in the city furthering that motion. There was some funding that was put with it. So they're furthering that motion by specifically referring to a couple of properties, including the 2400 Motel on Kingsway and the Jericho Beach Hostel. They're also referring to shelters. So sometimes it's when this is being referred to by park board, they're talking specifically about shelters. So it seems that it's a combination of 200 to 300 spaces that are being put forward specifically, again, for people staying in the park. And there's a number of issues around the way that that's being put forward.
So do we know how many people are currently living in Strathcona Park? I mean, I've heard the number of 400 tents, but...
At its peak, there are about 500 tents. There's also RVs with people who are homeless and staying in RVs. So there's been a long-term RV park in the area as well on Raymer Street alongside Strathcona Park. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's probably closer to, about 200 tents. So there's less people. A few people have had housing in the 7 or 8 months since the tent city has been there. Also, a lot of people, because of the weather and the really severe conditions, have left and found other places to stay, temporary or staying with friends or staying in shelters. Some people leave for a short while and then come back as well. It's just very difficult weather conditions right now, so there are less people in the park. So we count about 200 tents now, and then there's the RVs as well.
What sort of conditions are there for people living in the park right now? I mean, it must be terrifically soggy and wet.
It's very wet. It's very cold. Last night there was frost, so it's probably one of the colder nights. It does get very, very wet in the park. We were told when we arrived in June that there's certain areas of the park that are kind of low-lying and do get very muddy. And so we've sort of encouraged people to relocate into the areas that are a little bit higher and on the gravel area so that it's less wet underfoot. But it does get very wet, and there's a lot of rain, and it's very damp, so it's just very cold and very miserable and very difficult for people, especially when people are living in a tent that obviously is not designed for prolonged outdoor use. It's meant usually for like a week in the summer. So people are living in conditions that are just really not suitable, very difficult conditions to be in. In the tent city, we're able to help provide some things that alleviate that to a degree. So we have a lot of community donations. We're able to provide food. There's a community fire where people can come and warm up, and there's food and supplies that are provided. We get a lot of clothing donations. We get tents, sleeping bags, and blankets. We can distribute things like lanterns and batteries and small items like that just to help alleviate some of those conditions for people. And when people are all together in a tent city, it's possible to do that. So that's one of the reasons why people gravitate to a tent city.
What sort of facilities and infrastructure have been brought in to support just health and hygiene in the camp? Because one of the things I read in an article about the new act motion is that they're going to be bringing in a bunch of infrastructure, like more toilets and a warming tent and some things like that, which makes me believe maybe those things are not currently available to the campers. What's this current state of infrastructure and...
Exactly. So regarding health and wellness, one of the things we were able to do right from the beginning was have some health and wellness infrastructure. We had a medical tent. We've had nurses, volunteer nurses from the beginning. More recently, we've developed more formal partnerships with Reach Clinic, which is on Commercial Drive. So we regularly are able to provide transportation so people can go to the clinic for appointments and for picking up prescriptions. We also have the Kalela Lulum, which is a new clinic in the downtown east side. They have a mobile outreach program, and so there's a van that comes once a week with, again, nurses and wellness support staff. And so there's fairly robust medical support for people. And again, with our volunteer and community support, we're able to help getting people to hospital and to appointments. And again, these things are possible because everybody is located in one place, and it's pharmacists can come on a daily basis, drop off medication. We're able to find people to follow up and with prescriptions or follow up on their health care. Whereas if somebody is not staying in a tent city, that could be very difficult if they're homeless. Regarding the facilities, yes, we were asking from the beginning for more in the way of potable water, for showers, for a warming tent, of course, now. There are indoor washrooms, but they're very limited. There are two indoor washrooms, and there are porta potties. And we, in the summer, there was a misting station and more running water just through there was an outdoor hand washing station and running water in the garden area. So now there's less, and we've been calling for a long time for showers because, of course, that's really conducive to health and hygiene. It's really essential. And more washrooms, more access to potable water, and a warming tent. So the housing that's being talked about is not immediate. We know it's going to take maybe another month to 6 weeks. And so we're definitely requesting those facilities. And there's been a little bit of forward motion now, finally, from the park and the city.
So all this support for the tent city sounds quite involved. Who's helping with this? And is there any funding support coming that's available?
It is actually quite an elaborate infrastructure, and this has existed. Even in Oppenheimer Park, we had community support and volunteers. And then in Crab Park, because there was a lot of visibility, especially at the end with the eviction, there's a very large group of volunteers. So we have about 200 volunteers and a lot of community support and connections, a lot of outreach organizations and groups that we work with that help to provide support. So it's kind of organized really without a formal like nonprofit partnership. We do have BCH has a contract with PHS housing providers to come and do some functions within the park, but I would say it's more the elaborate community support and volunteers that do a lot of this. So, for example, a lot of the food is organized by volunteers doing pickups and community groups that do have a schedule, so a weekly meal that's provided that we pick up or that's dropped off at the park. All of the nursing initially was all done by volunteers, and then we were able to organize the two outreach groups. And really, it's done without any paid staff, very little paid staff, except for the few outreach workers from PHS. And in terms of funding, we have received, again, through the generosity of people in the community, we've received funding for different funds. We've currently got a shower fund, so in the eventuality that's not provided by the city, we would be able to purchase one. We're almost at the point where we can purchase one. We also have had a general GoFundMe fundraiser that helps with things like firewood for the community fire and like the lanterns and batteries and tents and blankets when we need to purchase them and all of those kind of support or infrastructure things. We also have had a laundry fund since the beginning, so we actually have volunteers that help people with laundry, which is, again, a really, something that really helps people and just alleviates their conditions when they can get their wet things warm and dry and back to them. And then we also had a health and wellness fund to support those initiatives as well.
If people are interested in contributing to any of these funds or just the project to try and make the tent city as livable and healthy as possible, where can they go? Is there one place they can go, or how can they find a way to contribute if they want to?
A lot of this is organized through social media, so I guess one location that has a lot of this information is the Friends of CCAP Facebook page. That has a lot of this information. We're also currently working on our Christmas fundraiser, so we were able to raise over $5,000 in community donations to provide a Christmas meal and gifts for this week. So that's been another successful fundraiser. And then we also did one recently on tech and power for people in the park, so things like batteries, lanterns, lights. Another thing we've been pushing for in terms of facilities has been electricity and internet, because, of course, having that access to power and chargers and phone banks is really essential, especially this time of year when people are wanting to communicate with their families, but also in general, if people are looking for housing and looking for support and resources for themselves, it's really difficult without a phone. So that kind of support we provide as well. So again, through social media, the Friends of CCAP Facebook page is a good starting point for that.
That's great. So with the plans announced by the city and the Parks Board, is what's been announced so far and planned so far, is it going to be adequate?
One of the big issues is that one thing that we have said since the beginning, when housing was being offered to Oppenheimer Park in August of 2019, is that there's always this targeting of people in the tent city. And as you can see from some of the things I've described, people living in a tent city, although obviously it's not ideal, there's lots of problems and lots of issues and the weather conditions and everything, but they are in some ways a little bit better off for some people than people who are staying on the street. But this housing is always targeted to people in a tent city because neighbors complain or because it's seen, it's very visible. So it gets its attention, whereas there's people who are staying on the street or in other parks that are in far worse conditions. Over the last weekend, we found a 20-year-old girl who was staying on Hastings Street on the 100 block, and she was sheltering under umbrellas, and she'd been homeless for 5 years, and she didn't have housing, and she's somebody who would not be considered with this plan, where there's 200 or 300 units that are being specifically designated for people in the park. And there's all kinds of people like that. There's seniors who've been staying in shelters for years. We've heard of people on BC housing lists for up to 19 years. So all of that is kind of overlooked by targeting this specific group of people staying in the park. Some of the other issues are that the measures are temporary. And, of course, it's not to say that it's not welcome to have people staying in a hotel or into housing that's indoors and dignified independent units. But mostly it's temporary. There's also SROs that are just not, we know that in many cases SROs are really not habitable. They're not suitable. We've had people who have been housed in SROs and just left because they found it just not possible to stay there because of the habitability, where they just didn't feel safe there. So some of the housing that's actually being offered is really not suitable. It's temporary or it's SROs, and it's also the kind of housing where people are not necessarily considered tenants. They might be considered as program participants, meaning they don't have the full rights of a tenancy. So there's sort of some problems around that. But it's also the fact that it's, again, targeted to those people in the park as opposed to everyone who's vulnerable and homeless and in need.
Yeah, I mean, I would say anecdotally, just from moving around during my life in East Van, that I've seen, for instance, I think more vehicles, parked in areas with people living in over the last couple of months, and that, just different issues like that aren't being picked up by this plan. We've seen this before, though. This is not the first tent city we've seen, and I suspect it will very much not be the last one. And every time the assurance comes that, when the tent city is closed down and cleared away, that everyone will be housed. But every time it seems to me that it's not even a matter of days before a new location pops up, which says to me that whatever is being done, and despite the assurances, something's missing in the solution.
Sorry, that's the other problem with this plan, is that it's kind of recycling the same ideas. It's not really doing anything to address the overall problem. So one of the issues is that, as you say, the numbers are much higher than the numbers of units that are being offered. Right now, numbers are kind of a difficult thing because it's always a finite thing. But these these solutions are not looking at the fact that this is a cyclical, multi-generational issue, and that homelessness is going to continue unless something much more dramatic is actually being offered than a few hundred units once a year when there's a tent city. So it's obviously not going to solve the problem, and it's going to just keep happening. So there's, you know, things like kids coming out of foster care, there's people living in poverty, people with precarious housing, so it's just going to keep happening. And right now it's all over BC. There's tent cities all over BC and all over Canada. So there's that issue. Of course, homelessness increased during COVID with so many more people not able to access shelters or not able to stay with friends and family. So the numbers are much higher than what's being quoted right now. And this is just a couple of hundred units that are being offered. It's also that the types of housing, again, it's sort of the same old properties that are being offered. And those, we know people get evicted or they leave or they're not suitable. So what's being offered is not working for people. And so that's another part of the problem, that even months later, some people have been evicted from housing that was offered after Oppenheimer. And also it was some of the hotels that were purchased by the city were turned into SROs with those kind of restrictive tenancy agreements where people are not sole tenants and there's a lot of rules that are very difficult, and so people end up getting evicted, so they're back on the street. So it's cyclical. These things are not working, and yet the same solutions keep being offered and perpetuated, that these are the proper solutions that are going to provide housing for everybody. So another issue is that it's just a public space issue. When you're talking about people returning to a park, if this doesn't work, in the interim, since we have had people in Strathcona Park, the park board passed the bylaw to make it meet the Supreme Court standards that all park board or all cities are supposed to have in BC. But it makes it more difficult for people to stay overnight in a park. So if people are not staying in Strathcona Park and there's a need for people to stay somewhere else, it'll be that much more difficult because that loophole has kind of been closed. So we also kind of have this public space issue where if people are staying on the street, they have their belongings confiscated and thrown away. If they're staying in a park, they have to leave at 7 a.m. There's less spaces that people can go into during the day because of COVID and less drop-in spaces. So it's just a whole public space issue where there's less places where people can actually be. And then you mentioned the RVs. And one other issue that's going on at the same time as what's happening with Strathcona Park is that the city has made moves to relocate people staying in that RV park. So they're starting to create a no parking zone on Raymer Street, where there's been this long-term, probably up to 10-year RV park. And you know, just coincidentally, they've now started to initiate this no stopping zone where they don't want to have people parking there. So, of course, that's going to create that much more need and homelessness because the people staying in RVs are homeless as well.
So tent cities haven't always been a feature of our urban landscape. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, a similar phenomenon of tent cities from the Great Depression, where something is seen as, you know, a feature of that difficult and dark time. But here we are today in a time that even, you know, these have been around for years through very prosperous times for Vancouver, not a Great Depression. And yet we have these camps. What is it we need to do as a society? And this is obviously a big question that you may not be able to answer, to try and address this issue actually. I mean, the city, perhaps it's even beyond the scope of the city to solve this issue rather than just sort of these stopgap measures. What do we need to do as a society to try and address this issue? Because, I mean, if it hasn't always been here, then it would seem that there is perhaps a way to solve it.
You're right that it hasn't been around for a long time, and it does relate to the fact that there has been a change in the way that housing has been provided in the last 40 or 50 years or so, and that relates to federal, to some degree, provincial housing policies, where there simply isn't that affordable housing that's provided year to year, and now we're seeing the results of it, and it's multi-generational now, and it feels like it's been for some people, it has been their lifetimes, but we know that it hasn't always been that case, and that's because the federal government used to provide a substantial amount of affordable housing every year, and now that has stopped almost entirely. And also even the renovation and upkeep of that affordable housing has not kept up, and so there's just less and less of it. And it's a really drastic drop from around the 70s when that housing was provided. Mm-hmm. So really there'd be a need for something like 10,000 units a year in BC to prevent, to be a preventative measure. So rather than these like 200 or 300 or few units that are provided every year when there's a tent city, it needs to be something that's really dramatic and a real shift in thinking. So it has to be for, you know, the families that are living precariously or at risk and low income, and people who are at risk of losing their homes and their housing. There's also, in terms of what we can do, a lot. There's also that sort of political will and the stigma. There's a lot of stigma around it that people are still kind of blamed for their life conditions and the lack of housing or addiction and, you know, the stigma around mental health and all of that. So it's both that political will, that really dramatic action that needs to happen so that there's, you know, something that is actually long-term and preventative and not a stopgap measure, but it's also the shift in how we think about people who are experiencing homelessness.
And in many ways, this is the homelessness crisis and the phenomenon of tent cities is really just the harshest end of the larger housing crisis. Because as you mentioned, you know, they're the folks who are living on the street or living in a park. But there are also many people who are precariously housed, who are underhoused, who are in housing that is costing way too much of their income. And so I guess the solution, you know, and all those people are on, you know, slippery slope might be too strong of a term, but, you know, on an edge where they can be put into this situation, and that situation itself is not really a good situation for a society. So I guess as you say, then the solution really is that we need government and society as a whole to seriously address the housing issue, not just for people living on the street, but well up the chain to make sure that appropriate and affordable housing is something that is in fact readily available.
Exactly. And as I said, this is a phenomenon that we see all across Canada. So even in Ottawa, which apparently is very unusual, there's been a tent city, I think, around Parliament Hill for since last year. And Bowen Island has had a seniors tent city. So all these unlikely, unusual places are seeing tent cities. A few weeks ago, I participated in a cross-country tent city conference call where people involved with tent cities all across the country participated. And it's a notable phenomenon that this is happening in these last few years. And it, to me, I think it is a culmination of these years of kind of neglect around housing and then sort of the stigma issues. And it's just creating this crisis where, you know, it's happening everywhere. So it's something, you know, we have to get away from the idea that it's a personal stigma, because it's not just one or two people. I mean, even then it wouldn't be like a, you know, a fault issue, but it's everywhere. It's all across the country. So it's something, it's a policy issue. It's like an overall kind of political policy issue that's been happening for a while.
So we just have a couple of minutes left, or a minute left. What is it going to take on the advocacy front to make this issue important enough to genuinely get addressed? Because I know there's been talk and talk and talk about the housing crisis, all the way from the issue of homelessness up to the issue of people who are underhoused or inadequately housed or precariously housed. But it doesn't seem to be getting better. If anything, it seems to be getting worse. What do we need to do on the advocacy front or to make this issue get the attention it needs?
I guess bringing attention to things like this and knowing that it's not that personal responsibility or the issues, an issue where there can be stigma assigned to it or blame assigned to it, but seeing that big picture and the way that housing policy has worked over the years and looking to change that in the bigger picture. On the ground, some of the measures that are being worked on are things like vacancy control, the SROs. So there is a little bit of movement we've seen on the ground with SROs, for example, which have contributed definitely in Vancouver to the loss of housing for a lot of people and more people being homeless. So just not having the availability of that SRO stock due to numerous reasons, even though we criticize them, but they are part of the housing continuum for a lot of people and have been affordable housing for a lot of people. So the loss of that has definitely contributed to homelessness. So some of those measures that we've seen just on the local level and having support around those, like the calls for vacancy control, rent control, all of those measures, I think everyone now is so impacted by housing that there is a little bit more advocacy and more sort of collaboration on that. So we've seen some, tiny bits of movement, but again, it's just not enough, and it's not big enough, and it's not on that larger scale that we need to see. So kind of being aware of housing policy and the need on the larger scale, the provincial and the federal levels, helping to push for that, and then also advocating for those on the ground local initiatives. And getting away from the stigmatizing aspect, I think, are the things that would make a difference.
Great. Well, thanks for speaking to me today, Fiona. Fiona York is a community advocate working on homelessness issues and supporting the Strathcona Tent City. Thank you for joining us today, Fiona.
Thanks for having me.